This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Throughout history, some North Carolina voters have split their ballots between Democrats and Republicans. In 2016, the state elected Republican Donald Trump for president, but Democrat Roy Cooper for governor.
In the past, my voting record has been all over the place. So split ticket is actually something that was preached in my household. You look at the person, the party is secondary.
However, the number of people splitting their votes between the parties continues to shrink. Blue Ridge Public Radio reporter and Morning Edition host Cass Harrington joins me now to talk about her reporting on the state's split ticket trends. Cass Harrington, welcome back to The State of Things.
Oh, thanks, Anita. Good to be talking with you.
Good to have you. So take me a bit into North Carolina's political history. There has been historically a significant number of split ticket voters in the state. Why is that?
Sure. Well, it has to go back to the history of really the South. And the Democratic Party, if you look in your American history books, the Southern Democrats actually supported slavery. So during the Civil Rights era, the 50s and 60s, we saw a gradual shift of Southern states becoming Republican. And yet still today, we see some Southern voters who still split their ballot, mostly in the local races or the state races, voting for Democratic candidates. But it's definitely kind of shifting away as politics gets more partisan.
And yeah, as compared to some of our other Southern neighbors, we were never quite as Democratic, and then we never became quite as Republican. And you heard about some of this realignment from some of the scholars you spoke with. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. And if you look at a map of the South and what governors are in office right now, there's only three states with Democratic governors, and that would be North Carolina, Louisiana, and Virginia. So in North Carolina is a really interesting case because it's made up of many different identities and cultures within it. And I think that's also a big part of it.
So as many as a quarter of voters in North Carolina used to be fairly reliable ticket splitters. And we saw this trend play out in 2004 and 2016. But this type of voting may be less common this year. And you spoke to a former split ticket voter about why she won't be splitting her vote in 2020. So let's listen again to Deborah.
If a candidate denies the pandemic, they are not my person. Right then and there, they are not my person, because I have watched family members who have lost loved ones without seeing that person, and there was no reason for that.
Deborah Lewis-Smith, who's voted for both Democratic and Republican candidates on the same ballot in previous election years, does not plan to do that this year. I'm here with Cass Harrington, a reporter and Morning Edition host for Blue Ridge Public Radio. So what did Deborah illuminate for you about why folks may be jumping from split ticket to straight ticket voting?
The times we're in, really, it comes down to the nationalization of local politics. And as a news reporter, I see many of that coming from a loss of local newspapers, newsrooms cutting their staff. And increasingly, what's going on in the national sphere is having a cascade effect all the way down the ballot. And you heard Deborah say, you know, she used to consider someone's character or whether they cared about her issues or things affecting her rural community. And now, particularly in the challenging times we're in with the pandemic, a historic recession, a lot of economic uncertainty, people just, you know, they're shifting from one team or the other, to simplify.
And also this polarization. I mean, we've been speaking in the past few weeks as we're looking forward to the election about how it's harder to find people within the party who have really different platforms. And that used to be the case, which may have been why people were able to find people who were both a Democrat and a Republican who they shared ideals with.
Right, right. And you're seeing candidates like here in Western North Carolina, Madison Cawthorn, his political campaign ads look or echo a lot of what Donald Trump is saying. And that's just, that is the climate that we are in politically.
I want to talk with you about another story that you've been working on, looking at immigrant voters in North Carolina and efforts to increase voter turnout among this group. It's kind of crazy how large this group is nationally. The immigrant electorate has nearly doubled in the past 20 years. So a big deal for folks to kind of capture the attention of this particular group of voters. Tell me a bit about what you've looked into in North Carolina, some of the immigrant voting groups you focused on.
I spoke with groups from across the state, of course, starting here in the mountains in Western North Carolina. I cover immigration, so I've been in touch with a lot of nonprofits and social service agencies, and a lot of it is just groundwork, old school organizing to include knocking on doors, of course, with social distancing protocol, wearing masks, you know, having flyers translated, which is such a basic thing, but in reality, it's lacking in our state, at least. There are three states that do have bilingual ballots, English and Spanish, and it's based off of census data. And a Duke University professor I spoke with said it is about time that North Carolina offer a bilingual ballot. And we're not just talking about the Hispanic community, of course. In the Durham area, I spoke with North Carolina Asian Americans Together, or NCAT, and they've been, you know, setting up tables outside of international grocery stores. They have a phone hotline that offers assistance in six different languages and informational videos on how to submit a by-mail ballot. So really, it's inviting folks into the space of voting where they might not have seen themselves before, or maybe heard themselves because of a language barrier, but among other challenges that they're confronting.
So obviously, this group is not a monolith. There are a number of kinds of immigrants in North Carolina, even. Are there strategies that both kind of groups trying to activate Asian American voters and groups trying to activate Latino voters are using similarly or differently? How do the groups' kind of tactics differ?
I saw a lot of similarities. In fact, Ricky Long with NCAT was saying, you know, one of his closest partners organizationally is a Latino organization. I mean, when it comes down to it, the policy issues might be different, or the, you know, the personal challenges might be different, but as a whole, immigrants whose second language is Spanish, their first language isn't English, if I'm trying to say, that's a shared challenge, and so they're all supporting one another. But certainly as a voting bloc, there is no such thing as the immigrant vote.
I'm talking with Cass Harrington, reporter and Morning Edition host on Blue Ridge Public Radio, today on The State of Things. You mentioned ballot access in one's own language, or a language that one feels comfortable voting in. In addition to that, what are some other barriers faced by Asian American or Latino immigrants in the state who are voting this year?
Sure. I mean, transportation is a big one. Some folks don't have a car. And one workaround that a group of Duke University students is doing is they've been tracking down naturalized citizens who are not eligible to vote, visiting them at their homes and saying, hey, you know, here's your information in your own language. You know, here's what you need. Here's a ride if you need a ride to the polls. Even some students have found voters whose ballots were rejected and said you were missing the witness signature that's required. You know, you still have a chance. And their message was received with tears, like, oh, my goodness, this is why I became an American citizen. This is something I wanted to take advantage of. Thank you. But also underpinning all of this, there's also emotional barriers. Of course, there's been a lot of anti-immigrant rhetoric embedded in some political campaigns, and that's been an intimidating factor. Just 2 years ago, Immigration and Customs Enforcement tried to access North Carolina's voter rolls. And for those who have family members who are undocumented, that struck a lot of fear into that population. So this is really going piecemeal, making, you know, human-to-human interaction, and saying, you know, you are welcome into the polls. This, you are safe, and it's your right now as an American citizen.
You also spoke with a scholar who illuminated that, you know, it's not just having access to information about how to cast your vote, but also how motivated various immigrant voter groups are to vote. And that may have to do with who is on the ballot. So let's listen to a clip from the associate director of the Hart Leadership Program at Duke's Sanford School of Public Policy.
You know, many immigrants feeling disconnected from the fabric of our democracy, feeling like perhaps their vote doesn't matter, you know, for a variety of reasons, including issues of representation, right? When people don't see people like themselves in elected office, then the incentives to get out and participate in the political process feels lower.
Lalila Kaligotla, I'm speaking with Cass Harrington, a reporter and Morning Edition host for Blue Ridge Public Radio. So talk a bit more about what she illuminated for you about the motivation and desire to be part of the political process at all.
Sure. I think, again, it's just about seeing yourself in that space, whether that's at the ballot box or looking at who's representing you in Congress and identifying with that person. And that speaks to the demographic shifts that are playing out in our country right now. And very strongly, she said, you know, it's not because immigrants have a lack of interest in voting. It's, you know, for whatever reason, they can't even if they wanted to. So we need to be thinking about voter access each election as it rolls around, how we can have more polling places accessible, how, you know, we can loop in transportation and, of course, translation of voter guides and ballots.
I'm speaking with Cass Harrington, Blue Ridge Public Radio reporter and Morning Edition host. You can find links to all of our reporting at our website, all of her reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Cass, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anita Rao.